What's up, everyone? Nate
and Brando here to let everyone know
we started a network.
Yeah, dude.
And Journey into Comics has been a breeding ground for new podcasts.
Yeah, like after 150 episodes of Journey into Comics, we just felt like now was the time to expand.
You know, and in expanding, you're going to find a wide array of shows on our network, including
Journey into Comics podcast,
Foodies Watching Movies,
Journey into Wrestling,
The Voice of Survival podcast,
and Podcastrophy,
with more to be announced very, very soon.
Yeah, dude, we just cannot wait, and we are so glad that this podcast network has launched, and we welcome you all
to the Journey into Comics Network.
The following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics, the podcast about everything nerd, with your hosts, Nate Phillips and Brandon Stone.
We've come a long way from the Prime Minister's exploding cake. Or have we?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Journey into Comics. I'm your host, Nate. Today, joining me, as always, the co-host with the Comos, Brando. How you doing, buddy?
I'm going pretty good, man. How are you today?
I'm really great. We are 1 week removed from the network launching. And I wanted to really quick kind of ask you, like, what are your thoughts on this network and how it started? Like, we kind of out of nowhere just said, hey, we're doing this network. And then all of a sudden now we have all these podcasts under our wing. And it's like crazy, you know?
Yeah, we officially have 6 podcasts on our RSS feed over on the Journey into Comics network. Over on journeyintocomics.com and podcast services, all that stuff. You guys know the deal. This is the first show that we've done since the network actually launched. The other show it came out as it launched, and we were in anticipation of. We stayed up till, I was up till 4 o'clock that morning, up 24 hours completely, working on the podcast, the site, our Patreon, all that stuff.
Yeah, man. And I think I was up probably about 2 or 3, of course. After I left your house, I drove to my dad's an hour and 20-some odd minutes so I could help him get some stuff done. That's actually where I'm recording again today. I'm always on the go, always on the run. So, but today, Brando, we'll continue to talk about the network throughout. But today, we have a very special guest. I feel like it's been 49 episodes since he was last on. He is the creator of Home. He's got a new Kickstarter we're going to be talking about today. His name is Todd Black. We've been a big fan of his since Journey into Comics episode 100 at Villains Con in Danville. I almost said Loffy Con.
Yeah, but, you know. Different con.
But Todd, how is it going, my friend?
Pretty good, man. It has been a long time. 49 episodes, and yeah, that's longer than people realize because it's not exactly a perfect year because you had some downtime and all that. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a while. So.
Yeah, things have been crazy in this world, but things roll for you. I think you're on issue 4 of Home is happened?
Actually, Home is done.
Wow, finished it. Congratulations, man.
Thank you. We got all 5 issues of Alicia's story done, and so we ended the story for right now, and so that's where we're moving on to our next Kickstarter project, which is 10,000 miles.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. 10,000 miles is a children's book.
Well, yeah, it's a children's book, all ages graphic novel. I call it a bunch of things. And it's about two brothers who decide to dig their way to China. So, yeah.
I dig it because it does kind of it's almost like a children's book with a comic book flavor. It's like you're bringing aspects of what you've all kind of already done in that medium, and now you're kind of crossing boundaries with that. Like when we talked about having you back on, just me and Nate earlier on in the week, he sent me, he goes, hey man, he's got to do Kickstarter up. And I thought it was another issue, of Home. I didn't know that you guys were done yet. And I'm like, this is kind of neat. This is completely different. Something that I certainly haven't seen before. And I really dig the art style that you have in this.
Thank you. Yeah, it's kind of like a personal theme of mine that when I start a new series, it's something entirely different from what my previous one was. So with Home, that was a sci-fi fantasy series, which was completely different from my previous series, which was Guardians, my superhero comic. And then with 10,000 Miles, I wanted to do something that everyone could read. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I call it a children's book because it has a kind of a Disney Pixar style feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
But also Disney Pixar appeals to adults as well. So I just wanted something different. And then my artist, Alex Garcia, who was the one who did Guardians with me, I gave him like a very simple reference of what kind of style I wanted. And then he drew that. And I'm like, yeah, that'll work. So people have been raving about the art style. And, you know, for me, because this was so different from Home, which was very much fantasy style and like, you know, rendering and color palette, I was scared to death about what people would think about the art for 10,000 Miles, because it's very shaded, it's got, you know, colorful tones and all that. And then some people saw it and they just started, like, they couldn't look away from it. And then like random people will see the art and they'll go, wow, that's really cool. And I'm like, yes, it worked.
In some ways it kind of has like a pastel paint look to it, and
yes,
and I really dig that experience. See, and it's from that art style that I draw, like the look of like what you would think that you would get from like a children's book. Well, you bring that kind of look and that feel into like, you know, a typical panel driven comic. That's kind of cool. And and to speak on what you were saying earlier about changing your project based on kind of like what you're doing, that is also, it's got to be really refreshing as a creator, because then you're not pushing yourself to do anything. You're not doing what you've already done. You're not retreading certain themes. Now it's a completely blank new state, and you get that opportunity to express yourself in an entirely different kind of manner and story and theme.
That's exactly it, because for the longest time, all I did was my superhero comic Guardians, and as much as that was my dream comic, I was doing, you know, what's this villain going to do? What's the Guardians going to do in this case? And eventually I had to stop and I was like, well, I want to do something special. And that's when I did Home. And so I was like, okay, this is a female protagonist instead of two male protagonists. And I was like, what's she going to be like? What's her world going to be like? And it just became this 5-issue miniseries that I truly love. And then with 10,000 Miles, you say, well, wait a minute, there's two main protagonists again. I'm like, yes, but these are actually brothers. They're not superheroes. They're just really, really bright. And they have a very personal story. And it just allowed me to be creative in how the story evolved. And it's, when I had this idea years ago, it was not this grand. I mean, it's a 72-page graphic novel. I didn't expect to be doing that on the Kickstarter, but I am. And it allowed me to push the story into some fun ways. And I really love how it turned out.
Yeah, the art, I just was reviewing the art a little bit more, because that was the first thing that caught my eye when you sent me a thing on that. I was like, wow, it looks great. I love the logo. I love that there's like the tunnel reference between America and China. The art, like I said, is really cool. But my big question here is, you're already a third of the way done. How long has your Kickstarter even been up?
Monday.
Wow, that's so amazing. Yeah.
So just 4 days, wow.
Yeah, it's let me tell you though, you know, it's been a stressful 4 days, because I launched it at like 12:01 Monday morning, and then I went to sleep, you know, a little while after, and like I woke up and there was like one pledge, and I'm like, oh crap. And then by the end of day one, we were like at 10, and then at the end of day two, we were like closer to like a little over 20, and then yesterday we had like two pledges. We've only had one today, but you know, we're at 35, and like this is slowly building. Like, yeah, we're a third of the way done, and I still have 31 days to go, and it's just great. But I'm trying to keep myself in a realist mindset. I'm like, okay, yeah, we're a third of the way done, but I still got $2,000 more to raise. And so I'm just trying to keep in that mindset, always promoting, never get comfortable. Always look for new avenues to promote, like, I don't know, being on the Journey into Comics podcast.
Hey, yeah, absolutely. So,
but I mean, trust me, I'm thrilled that we reached this milestone. I was hoping to get to this point by Sunday night at the latest, because that would have been our first full week done. And then, but to get it now, it just allows me to say, okay, let's see how far we can get from there. And then next week's goal will not have to be as much, because I'll have less to accomplish. But I'm still pushing for pledges. You know, I'm trying to find new people to help spread the word. And, you know, we've got some things going on, and hopefully it all works out, because I really want to make this comic. This has been in my head for years. This is something special. Like, when I made Home, I was like, this is something special. But then when I got myself a preview copy of 10,000 Miles, and when I looked at the art, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is gorgeous. So I really want other people to hold the full book in their hands and say, yeah, I'm happy I pledged to this.
I want to hold it in my hands.
Then you need to pledge to it.
Well, I'm obviously going to pledge to it. You know, we had Ben from the Black Suit of Death on recently, and we were talking about something I wanted to ask you about.
Okay.
And that is, you've done a lot of Kickstarters, man. In your experience, how often do you experience the Kickstarter lull, where it takes off like a bat out of hell, takes off like a rocket, and then it just plateaus for a minute, and it really does that thing where it really puts you on edge, like Ben and I were discussing?
Well, okay, that's a great question, because it's honestly, how do I say this? It's barring a, let's call it a legendary name, a legendary person working on whatever or whatnot, all Kickstarters have a lull. Now, for me, my first, gosh, 5 Kickstarters were all busts. One of them was stupid. I should never have done it in the first place. I can't believe Kickstarter actually allowed it. They should have totally blocked it. Like, what are you thinking? That's not actually a Kickstarter. Then I started to do ones for Guardians, and for whatever reason, they didn't work out. Home Number One was my very first successful Kickstarter. I still don't know why it got funded. I don't. Because I didn't have success before. And then, like, but because it was actually working and I was getting money, I was paying attention. I'm like, okay, like, the first week, it did really well. And then during the second week, it started to slow. Then I got this massive pledge that I thought was fake. And thankfully, it wasn't. But that gave me a boost. Then we just slowly climbed the rest of the way. Every Kickstarter professional and, like, comic Kickstarter person I've talked to, it's just the middle section. Because the first week, you're promoting it. I mean, the first week, you know, even like before the first week, you're like, say, oh, it's about to come out in 2 days. You need to be there. And there's like Thunderclap app, which tells everyone, you know, to, yeah, I know you know that one, Nate. And it tells them, hey, here's the Kickstarter's out. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'll pledge. And like everyone, like the first week is like, bam. But then that second week, you know, more than likely, all the people you personally have contacted have already pledged. So at least it's my experience. And so, you know, then you're like trying to reach the new people, and that takes time. And then week 3 is the same. And then, even though I personally don't see this, the last week/couple days are supposed to be the last surge, because Kickstarter will put it in the finishing soon section, and you know, that's supposed to get you more pledges. So I generally think the, if you do like a 4-week thing, I do 5 just because I'm paranoid. But the middle 2 weeks, or even 3 weeks, it's the hardest, and it tests your nerves, it tests your resolve to say, I gotta keep pushing, I gotta keep pledging. That's why people always tell me, if you do podcasts, you know, try and have them throughout the Kickstarter. If you can get them early, that's great, but try to have some in the middle. Just keep the word, keep your comic in their heads. So that's all. But it's tough. I make no bones about it. It's tough.
Well, right now, I mean, you, like you said, you have 35 backers on this one. Monday, September the 11th at midnight is when it's over. Is there? I know that I feel like for one of your Kickstarters, you had like a quick link. Is there a quick link for your 10,000 Miles book?
I did a tiny URL for this one. Yeah, it's tinyurl.com/10,000miles comic.
Okay, perfect. So if people are looking for that, that's the quickest way. We're obviously going to put it in the description of the episode. Brandon's really good about linking stuff like that. I always screw it up. I'm like, hey, I got this, and then it doesn't open, or it like kicks you off the page when you're in the middle of listening to the podcast. We don't want that. But so, Todd, what else is new, man? What else is going on in your life, man?
Well, I mean, besides 10,000 Miles, which is like consuming my life, you know, I'm just working on other books. Home, as I mentioned, we got done, and we actually compiled it into a volume paperback, which we are selling on Amazon.
That's
which
badass,
is really boy. Cool. That is cool. It's I started using Amazon for, I write Sherlock Holmes books now, and I don't think I ever told you that, Nate, but I do. And so I was like, I would use that to publish it. I'm like, I think I can publish my comics on there too. So home had just gotten done, and you know, people were really liking the paperbacks that I had been printing, and so I was like, let's just try it. So you know, that's on there now. It's just another avenue for an indie comic guy like me to sell his books, and so that's just cool. And then I'm working on a secret project for someone else, and I'm hoping to spill the beans on that soon. But you know, it's very exciting. It's one that I sought out myself, and it's so far it's going pretty well. But I'm really just hoping to get 10,000 miles out, because once I do that, I can focus on my next comic series, which I'm already thinking about. And it's just, it's a never ending writing process, and I love it.
So now for the Amazon thing, with you mentioned you write Sherlock Holmes. Now,
yes,
at LaFeeCon, we did a panel with an author who uses Amazon to publish some of his work as well. And Nate, do you remember that panel?
Was that with Andy Cordy?
No. Nope. That was with Brian K. Morris.
And, oh,
my good friend, Brian K. Morris, by the way.
God damn it, Brando. You were setting me up to knock that one out of the park, and I totally missed.
At least you got Andy's name right this time.
Yeah, well.
Seriously, Todd, live on the stage, we're doing this panel. He calls him Derek, and the dude says... And he goes, I don't think you heard him. And then whenever we went on with the panel, and then he said, now on to you, Derek. He goes, Andy. Very uncomfortable. But anyway, yeah, Brian told us a lot on the panel about, you know, using Amazon as a driving force, you know, to release, you know, like, you know, the books and stories and whatnot. And he said, he said you can even write like fan fiction on there as well and release that. And I was like, really, fan fiction? He said, yeah, like people go on there and they'll write stories based on with existing stories and whatnot. So I was wondering if that was kind of like the same program or same thing that you were doing there with Sherlock.
Well, you're close. Brian K. Morris actually told me that Sherlock Holmes is a public domain character.
Well, I assume that he would be. I mean...
Well, I didn't. I thought, because if you think about it, you know, he's got a show on CBS. Mm-hmm. He has the BBC show, you know, whether it's canceled or not, it's still up in the air. He has, like, numerous movies, TV specials. You'd think that this guy, who's been everywhere, is name restricted, you know, copyrighted and all that. But he's not. And ironically, it was, judged. There we go. It was judged to be public domain right here in Illinois.
Wow.
And I know. And so Sherlock Holmes, John Watson, Moriarty, Eileen Adler, Mycroft, all of them are public domain characters because the author, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle didn't copyright the early books. He only copyrighted the later ones, which is, for example, when Sherlock Holmes became a beekeeper, so I can't make Sherlock a beekeeper in my books. But everything else is basically open game. And certain stories, like The Hounds of Baskerville, are completely open to reinterpretation without penalty. So I have had a Sherlock Holmes story in my mind for a while now, and I just started to run with it. And when I released it, a lot of people liked it. So
awesome.
I'm working on book two, which actually should be releasing soon. And my series is called Sherlock Holmes, The Greatest Detective. And it's the first issue was on, first novel is on Amazon right now.
Awesome. That's absolutely great that, you know, like you as a creator and author have been able to kind of divide yourself up to almost, I kind of feel like the same way that I do sometimes when I'm creative. It's like I have this avenue to be creative in this aspect of my brain and this one for over here, this one for over here, this one for over here. And somehow when I juggle them all in my head. I bounce from one to the other. It's like one day I'll be thinking all about this story or this idea, and the other day I'm like, okay, now I'm over here, you know, working on this one.
It's I like to be honest sometimes. I like to be honest when it comes to my creativity, and I am amazed at the stories that I can come up with. Sherlock, my Sherlock book came because I love Elementary, and then I love the BBC series, and I've watched both of the Robert Downey Jr. movies, and it's just, I like the concept, I like the idea of mystery, and I'm like, what could my mysteries be? And so, like, my first one is about Sherlock and Watson in, you know, 2016, 2017, London, meeting a swordsman who asks for their help, and I'm like, well, that's unique. And then my second book is about Sherlock Holmes versus spontaneous human combustion. And I'm like, there you go. And I'm like, that's perfect. That's the perfect mystery for Sherlock. And it's just amazing my mind comes up with. And my next comic book series, which I can't fully go into, but it came, I kid you not, because of a Facebook meme. I had no concept of this comic beforehand, never popped into my mind. And it was one of those memes where it's like, you know, what's the first letter of your first name, you know, last letter of your last name or whatever, and then that's your thing. And it was, what would your anime be? And I'm like, oh, I gotta do that. Let's do it. So I did it was my initials TCB, and the result was something I'm like, dude, that could actually be an anime. And so I posted about it. I made like a Deadpool reference. I'm like, ooh, smells like a franchise, you know, something like that. And like a bunch of people responded. They're like, no, that really does sound like a franchise. And I'm like, okay, let's see what I can cook up. And I got this amazing idea, if I do say so myself, about what it could be. And I'm like really excited because that'll be my next comic book series after 10,000 miles. And so, well, if 10,000 miles get funded, but it's just a Facebook meme. Are you kidding me? I was like, wow.
Man, you just forced me into asking probably a really weird question.
Go on.
So you just said this is your next planned thing, but then you said if 10,000 miles gets funded. So then the obvious question is, what happens if it doesn't? I mean, obviously you're not gonna like spin your tires as a creator and stop what you're doing. You'll probably relaunch the Kickstarter at some point.
Yeah.
But I mean, what I really don't know, because I've never been courageous enough to do something like a Kickstarter. I think that's very, you have to really open yourself up to people, you know?
It's a fear that I honestly had every single issue of Home, especially after Home Number One. Because, you know, you don't fear failure with the first one, because if you lose, you just restart it and you don't have to worry about it. But if you fail during the 2 through 5, you're like, well, crap, I've got fans who want to finish the story. What am I going to do? With this one, it's a little bit of the same. I acknowledge I could fail. Again, I'm thrilled that 10,000 miles has $1,000 raised so far. And, you know, that makes you happy. But again, I got 2,000 more to go. Should the worst come to pass, I'll basically do what I've done already, which is I have the first 20 pages of the book done. I wanted to have that much done so that I wouldn't have to charge so much for the books and the rewards, and then have the main goal be too high. So should the worst come to pass, I would just do that again. I would maybe make the next 20 pages, make it 40 pages, and say, okay, here, let's try it again, and then give or take, it'd slash the price of the Kickstarter in half, and then I feel I could probably get, you know, between $15,000 and $2,000, and I would make it happen. I refuse to give up on 10,000 miles. I think it's too good of a story to do so. But should it happen, it would take a lot longer. I won't lie, because, you know, I'm not made of money. I have to fund these pages by myself. But should it happen, I would continue to make it until it's done one way or the other.
Well, I love that spirit, the never give up spirit. Obviously, I believe in what you're doing.
Thank you.
Know, You have a great concept. Again, just like you had with Home, I myself am not made of money, but I'm going to do my best to pledge and get and try to get myself a copy of 10,000 Miles, because just on the art alone, I'm absolutely sold. And then when I read about the story and, you know, these brothers, the impossible kids, and like,
yeah,
that I love that idea of a coming of age story like that, you know.
I wanted something that was personal, and, you know, Home was very personal. It's about, you know, finding your place in the world. But with 10,000 miles, it's about these two brothers who have done so much together during their time, and then they turn 18, and life says, nope, you're going to be separated. And it's just, they're like, crap, we've never been 4 days apart. Now we're going to be like months and months apart. What are we going to do? And they're like, we got to do one more adventure. And it's like, let's dig our way to China. And it's like, wait, what? So it's a story about, you know, growing up and how to deal with life when it, you know, throws a curveball your way, which is something we can all relate to. And that's why I call it now an all-ages graphic novel, because people can say, well, children's books kind of confusing. Like, fine, all-ages graphic novel. Like, oh, okay, that works. But and as for your pledging, pledge what you can. I mean, I've been saying this for a while, but, you know, every pledge helps. $1, $5, $25, which is what you'll need to get the paperback book. What I would love is to get 100 people pledging $25. Because that means that 100 people have wanted to get the paperback version of my book. And, you know, we've actually gotten a few people pledging the $25 tier. A lot of people pledged the $50 tier, which is my Get Drawn to the Comic reward. I lowered it from what it was at home because we can have 30 people now in the book versus the 5 or 10 we had beforehand. But I would love to have 100 people pledge $25. It's a nice middle amount. It's not too expensive. You're getting a full story. And, you know, so that's what I'm trying to do. So if you can only pledge that much, Nate, that's fine.
Man, I'm going to definitely get my $25 together.
There you go.
Because I have to have a copy of the book. You can't just have amazing art like that and not end up with a copy of the book. That would be foolish.
Yeah, I just love this story. And it was just one of those things. It just came because of it was a Scooby-Doo episode. They made a joke about China being 10,000 miles, like, straight down, and that always stuck with me, and I'm like, well, then I started thinking about doing a Disney Pixar-style story, and the joke came back into my head. I'm like, well, I've seen Digging Your Way to China, like, everywhere, but never in a comic, so let's do it. And, you know, here I am finally on Kickstarter, and, yeah, if you're a comic reader, if you love Disney Pixar-style stories, if you're a parent wanting to find a good book for their kids, 10,000 miles is for you. It's for everyone. It's got family, it's got friendship, it's got brotherhood, it's got comedy, lots of comedy. Oh my gosh. I was surprised I was able to write Bryce and Chris, that's my brothers, their dialogues so well, because I don't have a brother myself, but it just came so natural, like the stabbing at each other, you know, the I know you so well, I know what you're going to say and everything. It really worked out well. And then Alex's art just totally makes it soar. So I really hope that anyone listening to me will consider pledging, because this is a really cool story and I really want as many people to read it as possible.
Yeah, man. I was going to ask you, you were talking a little bit about it and you know, you said you don't have a brother yourself, but where does this concept of your story like start? Like when did this pop into your head in the Scooby-Doo episode? Like, what made you go, damn, I could really do something special with that other than just I want to do it because of because you said you have really a lot of family and personal stuff within this book.
Yeah.
So there's got to be something, I mean, a little bit deeper than just the Scooby-Doo episode that got
you. It's
place.
A little deeper than that. But, well, the Scooby-Doo episode, it's fine. The Scooby-Doo episode was the spark, because I'm like, the way my mind works, I remember certain things forever, and I'm always going to remember that Scooby-Doo episode. And so that just stuck in my head. Then I was working at Meijer in Champaign, and they in the electronics section, which I always tried to frequent when I was working, they had previews going for, at the time, The Good Dinosaur, which was, you know, one of the only Pixar flops. And there was a comic book contest going on for Oni Press, and they were asking for submissions. And that's actually where Home came from, was from that submission process. But, you know, you never put all your eggs in one basket. And, you know, it came to where I was like, okay, let's write another story. And I saw the preview for The Good Dinosaur, and I just got to thinking, what is the basis of a Pixar film? And I thought about all the movies that they've made, and you could really boil it down to a what-if question. What if toys could talk? What if cars were alive? What if a comet missed the dinosaurs, et cetera, et cetera? And so I was like, and then the Scooby-Doo episode popped into my head. I'm like, what if two kids actually dug their way to China? But as for like Chris and Bryce, I always imagine what it would be like to have a brother. And Chris I would like to think is a better version of myself. I say that because he can actually write and draw. I can only write. And then Bryce, I just thought, what if would be the perfect complement? And so, like, Bryce is a builder, he's a fabricator, he's a mechanic, he does everything with his hands. And I'm like, what would be the best thing to do to these kids, and what's the worst thing to do to these kids? So the best thing was to be building them up, you know, give them, you know, kind of a fame in their hometown, make them the kids that never give up, that value their brotherhood and everything. And then the worst thing to do would be to split them up, because life sucks at times. And that's something I've had to deal with quite a lot. But I just wanted a story about that reflected the pain of growing up, but also the beauty of life that can happen when you let it happen. And there's a page, I can't spoil it, but my characters reflect on life due to a certain thing that happens to them. And it's my interpretation of life itself, because you never, if you had asked me, okay, I'm 27 years old. If you had asked me 10 years ago when I was, you know, getting close to getting out of high school, if you told me that I was going to be a comic book writer, I was going to be, you know, doing cons all over Illinois and Indiana, that I would have met certain people because of my comic book writing, I'm like, dude, I barely write, you know, regular stuff. You know, I write because I feel like I have to. I don't do comics. You know, that's what I would have said. But because I let life take me where it did, I got a degree in video game development, which led me to going to a Comic-Con for the first time, which inspired me to become a comic writer, which inspired certain industry professionals to, you know, say, yeah, kid, keep doing your writing, you'll make it one day. And now here I am trying to get my third series off the ground. Everyone, I feel, has the potential for that kind of a story, and I want to show that in a way that everyone can relate to while having some fun at the same time. And, you know, digging your way to China, that's a pretty unique life story. So
When I hear you, I don't know if Brandon necessarily sees this how I see it, but when I hear you talking about digging your way to China, all I can think about is that Ninja Turtle toy with the drill on the end, you know, like from like the you know, the 90s cartoons.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I had that. It was like one of my favorite toys when I was a kid. So I talking about drilling your way to China, and I'm like, I just want to take that thing and make that happen, you know?
Well, they do make a drilling vehicle in the story.
Was there any inspiration? Is my lead in question?
No. The inspiration was not the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles toy, but I wish it was now, because I did watch the 90s cartoon and I do not remember that drilling toy. But no, this is not too much of a spoiler. On the cover, you see Chris and Bryce leaning against this big machine. That's the Roddy, which is their drilling machine that they are going to make to dig their way to China. So, and that machine plays a big part in the story. So, yeah, it's going to be good.
Brando?
My toddler's at the door.
Oh, okay.
See, that's all the reason for you to pledge, because you can read the book to him.
Hey, he got you on that, man.
I tell you what, I've been reading him nonstop, The Very Hungry Caterpillar lately.
I know that one.
And do you know what? It's so awesome that he's like into it and wants you to read it. But when he comes up to you and is like, read the book. Buddy, I just read it to you. Mom, I just read it to you. Read the book. Okay, one more time. And then it just gets to the point where I start like not changing the story, but I start trying to say, what's this now? What's that? What's this? What's this? And, I have a blast, and I'm so happy that he's into books, but he's also very into destroying books. So so that is not good. However, all the books we let him handle are like the hard cardboard kind of books. So it's, you know, he can throw those around and bend them. He hasn't tried to eat them yet, so that's good.
Oh, it's progress. That's progress.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, he got his books taken away today, dude. He threw them. He wanted us to read the book, and then we didn't read the book, and he threw the book, and got his book taken away, and to which, he likes to fling himself onto the floor. He started doing this, and I assume this is more of like kind of a toddler thing. He's two now, In the past, he has kind of hit his head on the floor, but the other day he like threw himself on the floor and then bashed his face into the floor and then was like, "What have I done?" And I'm just like, "Yeah, you don't do that." But
dude, life's tough. Get a helmet.
Tell you what, this kid, dude, he's built like a brick, man. He's built like a brick house, I should say. This kid is tough, but you know, I as I said before, I really dig the art style of this project so much that, like, it's so unique compared to anything I've ever seen as far as, like,
yeah,
like told in this medium. Like, okay, like you see this kind of things told maybe like a kid's book, you know, but when you take this and you apply it here, it does make this project stand out, and it does make it feel more like you said, maybe Pixar-esque, as far as like, because I could definitely see some influence. I mean, just look at the backgrounds of some of the rooms here. It looks like it was taken straight from Andy's house. Maybe not like the cloud bedroom, but the cloud wall bedroom. But I'm really digging that treehouse too.
Oh, the treehouse. Treehouse is very important because the whole reason they're called the Impossible Kids is because they do what adults and other people deem as impossible. When they're 10 years old, they say, "Hey, Mom, Dad, we want a treehouse." And they go, "Okay, that's fine. Where do you want it?" And they say, "Oh, there's this tree in the park." And they know immediately that they're talking about the tallest tree in the entire town, which is impossible. So, like any good kids, they listen to their parents for all of 5 seconds, and then they plot to make the treehouse themselves. And sure enough, they do make a treehouse together with no other help but themselves when they're 10 years old. And they're like, the parents are like, "Dang, these kids just did the impossible." And the newspapers ran with that, and they became the Impossible Kids. And that treehouse is a kind of a cornerstone of what they do and why they dig their way to China. So I was very proud of that. And then someone asked me, "Todd, did you have a treehouse when you were growing up?" I'm like, "No."
Me neither.
Didn't have a hoverboard either. And that's later on the Kickstarter, on some of your pages you have posted here.
Wow.
They build like an actual hoverboard.
They do. They build two, actually. I did have to bend, you know, the laws of physics a little bit and everything, because as easy it is to say, you know, "Oh, they're going to dig their way to China," to make it believable, I had to do some things. So, like, the treehouse was part of it, and then I'm like, they've got to do something more advanced. They got to do something more technical. I'm like, well, they could make a hoverboard and everything. And so that kind of dips into the sci-fi into it. And so that when they get around to making the Roddy, you know, you believe that they can do it. You know, you believe, "Oh, well, they made a hoverboard, building a drilling machine, you know, that's nothing." So it was a key step for me. But yeah, it was really funny. And then I also make another Tron reference when I say Bryce makes a light cycle for Chris for his birthday. Like, we don't see it, but it's just like, yeah, he did that. And like, I just had to throw that in there because I'm a big Tron fan. But it's fun seeing what these two do together. And I can already hear some people, I can hear them in the audience, and they go, "Wow, this kid's really spoiling all the book." Not even close. I can guarantee you, I haven't even gotten past page 30 right now, and this is a 72-page book.
Well, all we're doing is like just kind of pulling from the Kickstarter page. I mean, we just found out about this week, and I first checked it out just the other day. And so all of these pages that you know that you see the little drilling machine, you see the hoverboard, you see the treehouse, that's all just right on the page that you've already shown, you know, people who want to probably back this. And so, like, yeah, I mean, you're not giving anything away that's really going to take away from maybe the majestic part of like telling this story about these kids drilling their way to China.
Yeah. And like if people pay attention, they should notice that there's three people on the cover. I haven't mentioned a girl at all.
No.
So who is this mystery person? You're going to have to read to find out.
Oh man. Now you got me like, I'm not going to make any predictions. That would be cool.
You shouldn't. Cause I guarantee you they're wrong. Okay, actually, I'll take that back. You can predict one thing, that it is a girl. Okay?
Okay, fair enough.
That is indeed a girl. And but everything else you're probably thinking about her is more than likely wrong.
She's the ghost of Christmas present.
No, ghost of Christmas past. See?
Already oh, wrong.
Darn. God. So close, Nate.
Wait a minute. What's the... I just... When you've been saying the name of their ship or their drilling device...
Yeah, the Roddy.
I was thinking R-O-D-D-Y, like Roddy no. Piper, and I nope. thought that was your... Okay, so what's... The way you spell it, where's that inspiration come from? Do we learn about that in the book? Is that something I should not ask to spoil?
Yes, no, I can tell you that. That's not exactly important. It okay. actually came from the letterer of Home, Zach Somm, because I was making concept art of this while we were doing Home, and I'm like, I need a good name for a drilling machine. And, okay, first of all, some people gave me, like, some really perverted answers, and I'm like, dude, it's a kid's book. What do you want? What are you doing here? And they go, but you said drilling. Yes, as in a bore. You know, like an actual tool. And then they got even more perverted. I'm like, oh, I'm muting you. Go away. No, it was terrible. I'm like, what are you doing? And so, but then my friend, Zach, who again was the letter at home, he said, what about the Roddy? And I'm like, wait, like, and I said, like you did. Wait, like the wrestler? No. He goes, no. In Norse mythology, Odin had a drill that he used to, like, bore into the earth and other realms to do something or whatever. And it was called the Rati, R-A-T-I. And I'm a big fan of mythology. I love Greek and Norse and Roman mythology. And so I'm like, okay. So, now, ironically enough, I do make the Rati joke in the book. He's like, wait, Rati? No, Rati, so. But it just, I would never have thought of that name because I'm not as familiar with Northern mythology as I probably should be. And so I'm grateful for Zach to do that one. Because I think if I'd gone too kids booky, it would have just been too corny. But that just felt right. It's just elegant enough, you know, for a writer like Chris to have come up with that. So,
man, I have I was going to ask you something and then my brain always, oh, I do know what I was going to ask you, man. Okay. So, when we last talked, I'm going to take this way back, several issues. Do you remember one of the big things we discussed when we were the first time we interacted at episode 100?
Well, I mean, you talked about how epic I was at Villains Con. That was a big topping point, you know, my epicness. I do not remember, actually. I'm sorry, it has been too long.
It was BVS versus Civil War.
Oh, no, not this again. We spent like an hour on this.
I don't want to go back to this, actually. I want to flash forward to where we are now in the scope of Marvel movies and DC movies.
Yes.
And get you have a very, very good opinion, in my opinion, I guess is how you'd say that.
That's a fair way of saying it.
But I like where you come from when you talk about this stuff, and I want to know... Like, new Guardians came out, Spidey's come out. We know essentially now that there's this big, the tale of two directors for Justice League and the tonality of that movie.
Yeah, don't forget Wonder Woman.
And Wonder Woman was fucking amazing. It was fantastic. It was so good. But I just wanted to get your overall opinion on kind of the landscape now in Marvel and DC.
Well, it's a complicated. First of all, I do recall something I said on your podcast the last time I met. I said, what would happen if Suicide Squad did better than Doctor Strange at the box office? And I was right by 30 million. And sure enough, you know, people blasted Suicide Squad even though it got a lot of money. And, you know, people praised Doctor Strange and even though it was only 86 some odd million. And I'm like, no one can win here. And, you know, then we got Guardians of the Galaxy. It was like the second best opening ever for a Marvel film, not named Avengers, I think.
Yeah.
And Captain America, obviously, Civil War. Then Wonder Woman, you know, did 103. Spider-Man, 117, something like that. You know, as much as one side may hate the other, Marvel and DC are just doing two incredibly different things, and it's wrong to compare them. Case in point, when Captain Marvel eventually comes out, I'm not going to compare her to Wonder Woman. That's wrong. You know, these are entirely different characters. As much as Carol is an amazing hero, she's not as pure of heart as Diana is. You know, that was the crux of the Wonder Woman movie, was how pure and naive Diana is. Carol's not that. She's brash. She's stubborn. She's a lot of things. But I'm still looking forward to her movie. And then, you know, the Spider-Man Homecoming. I never saw the Amazing Spider-Man films. You know, my last Spider-Man film was Spider-Man 3 with Raimi and, you know, Maguire and all them. And I loved Homecoming. It was good. Michael Keaton, he could play a good guy. He could play a bad guy. As long as he has wings, he's good. I saw like a poster. It was a Batman, Birdman, Vulture, Lord of the Wings.
Oh, that's amazing.
It was beautiful.
Oh, fuck.
I know. But
I'm gonna have to search that out now.
Yeah, and you know, and I loved Homecoming. I liked Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I did not love it as much as I loved Guardians of the Galaxy 1, which is still a holy grail movie for me. You know, one of my favorite of all time. Wonder Woman. I cried. I cried during Wonder Woman. It was so beautiful. I gave it a 5 out of 5. The last time I did that was X-Men Apocalypse, which I still stand by. I still say that's an amazing movie. But I am looking forward to Dark Phoenix. Hope they don't screw it up this time. But Marvel and DC, they're just different. They've said they're different to one another. They respect one another despite the bullcrap that you sometimes hear them spew at one another. You know, look at what Marvel's doing with Legacy. It's the same thing DC did with Rebirth. You know, more or less, you know, trying to bring back the pureness of the comics that has been lost to all these dark crossovers, Secret Empire, which I'm enjoying, by the way. And I go into every single DC and Marvel movie not caring about the previous films, what reviews have said. I sometimes look at review scores just to see what they said, but I go in there with no expectations other than to want to watch an enjoyable movie. And if it doesn't live up to my expectations, I will say so. But I will not bash anyone who, you know, didn't like the film like I did, or because I get criticized so much because I think BVS is one of the best comic book movies ever made, and including on this podcast. but it's fine because I know people didn't like it as much as I did, and you know, despite what you might think, you know, people are slowly turning to it. I saw a guy say to me today, you know, BVS is gonna be that movie that 5 years from now everyone's gonna realize, oh, it really is a good movie. I don't know if that's actually true, but, you know, I like the sentiment. And, you know, going into Justice League, yes, we got this Joss Whedon thing going on, and I don't think that the movie's going to change that much. I have heard of the new scenes costing like $25 million and the mustache. Oh, my gosh. Okay, let me tell you about that one. I came into that story because of Twitter, because everyone started talking about how Superman looked like Freddie Mercury from Yeah, there you go.
Joey Mercury, Eminem.
Eminem. Awesome. Great wrestling.
Oh, that was great wrestling. And I watched Johnny Mundo on Lucha Underground and enjoy every single match. Because that guy's a star. How Miz got over him is, never mind. I'll save that for Journey into Wrestling. You know.
Hey.
There you go.
Nice plug.
Thank you. It's a gift. But no, the people talk about Freddie Mercury and how he looked like Superman. I'm like, Superman doesn't have a mustache. And I'm like looking through all these tweets. I'm like, could someone tell me what's going on here? And finally found the thing about, you know, the digitally removing the mustache. But I still have high hopes for Justice League. That trailer at San Diego Comic-Con was awesome. I really liked that. Best moment for me was Aquaman pinning down the parademon, going through the building, just going, hair shake. I'm awesome, you know. You know, that's gonna be good. But and if it doesn't meet my expectations, that's fine. I liked Suicide Squad, but it was not a great movie. Okay? That the ending what didn't work as well. I hated that Enchantress was the bad person, villain. Ugh. you know, they didn't need to do that. And even David Ayer says to this day he wishes he had made it Joker. So, you know, they live and they learn, okay? And I liked Ant-Man. I didn't love Ant-Man. But am I going to go see Ant-Man and the Wasp? Heck yeah. Because I think it's got a lot of potential. And, you know, now Michelle Pfeiffer is Janet Van Dyne. Who knew? So we are so... One of the things I like about myself is I'm a loyal person. And loyalty is a beautiful thing. But loyalty can also be a bad thing when you let it blind you. And as sad as it sounds, we, the comic book community, are too loyal at times to our brands to where we refuse to be open-minded about these things. I saw reviews about Wonder Woman, this movie that made me cry. It was like the Guardian, not my Guardian, the paper of the Guardian, who said, like, you know, they turned her into like a Smurfette-like character. I'm like, are you blind? I almost went on a rage because of that. And thankfully, a lot of people were better. But then I looked at IGN, and they gave it like a 7.8, which is like the evil number. You know, you shouldn't do that. And I'm like, how do you look at this movie and only give it a 7.8? But I know I have to respect their opinion because it's theirs. That person did not feel the same way as I did, and I'm okay with that. I have to be okay with that because if not, I'm them. I'm that person who just destroys Batman v Superman. You know, it's like, how dare you think of that? You have no taste. And loyalty is fine, but obsession and desire to see them reign supreme is wrong. And so, when Justice League comes out, I am going to watch it. And I'm hopefully going to enjoy it. But if it's not, if it's only a 3.5 out of 5 for me, I will rate it as such. I am going to enjoy Thor Ragnarok, especially because it comes out on my birthday. Yeah!
Hey, nice.
And then if I see someone from the theater, I'll go, oh, I know him. We're friends from work. No, I'm joking. but I'm going to look at watch Thor Ragnarok. And if it's an amazing film, I will rate it as such. But if it's not, I will rate it as such because it's my opinion and mine alone. So
there's a reason why I should never be like a film director, because the whole mustache thing about them digitally removing the mustache, I would leave it in just to mess with people.
Well, you see, I felt there's a way around that. I mean, this kind of shows their hand, if you think about it, about what they're going to do with Superman.
Yeah.
Because the obvious thing would have been do Death to Superman, where he had, like, the mustache beard thing. So this kind of shows that they're either not going to do that, or these reshoots are, like, in the end sequence where he doesn't have that.
Yeah.
So we don't know. And, okay, there's one more thing about these reshoots thing. People are complaining, you know, $25 million and whatnot, and Joss Whedon, and, you know, what happened to Zack Snyder, which is a freaking tragedy, okay? I saw people insulting Zack Snyder after he revealed why he left, and I wanted to punch them.
Tasteless.
Not out of loyalty, but of being a freaking human being.
Yeah.
So, but let us not forget a little movie called Rogue One, okay? A movie that had massive reshoots. The trailers weren't even close to accurate in some of the scenes they depicted. And yet it made $140 million and is still considered a great Star Wars movie. I loved it. I thought it was great. But, you know, reshoots, script revisions, you know, modifications out the wazoo. And, you know, everyone feared, oh, Rogue One's not going to be good. This is going to be a failure for the Star Wars. And $140 million. Now, if Justice League, if we're just being fair and objective, if Justice League makes less than Batman v Superman, yeah, I would consider that a failure because of all the publicity, you know, years of hype and all that. But I have a feeling it could do that. It can do better, but we won't know until we see it. I'm willing to wait to see it.
It does have the negative stigma from BVS coming into it.
But it also has the positive of Wonder Woman coming into it.
Yes, but like, okay, so if this movie's coming out, because this is where like the modern day online reviewer, it can help or hurt a film's performance drastically. Because of BVS, people went to go see that movie. Some people didn't enjoy it. Some people did. That's a very divisive movie. I've never, ever seen just a single movie be that divisive amongst fans in recent memory. But if that movie releases and everyone's like, this is actually a really good movie, then those people who are already like standoffish, there are people who are waiting just for that. You're like, well, I'm not going to go until I hear that it's a good movie. Then once it has met that, then they will go. So then you're looking at like, it's on to, they have to, so you're going to have a whole group of people wait to spend money to go see a movie based on what somebody else thought of it.
Exactly.
And so, like, to me, I'm always of the mind of, I would rather judge for myself. You know, when BVS was coming out, I already heard about the bad reviews. I still wanted to see it regardless. I rather enjoyed the movie. I didn't think it was great, and I think it has its issues. I want to say here I gave it like a 7 out of 10. And then with the extended, I added like a 0.5 to that. I still think that, like, as far as my expectation, most of my expectation was met. A lot of my problem with the film wasn't my expectation. It was pacing. It was relegation to important dialogue, like, relegated down to one line. It's like a passive line. If you missed it, you didn't understand what he was saying. But Civil War had similar issues. It had,
yes!
Civil War was an entire movie built around one scene. And while it has good moments in it, and while it does have some good storytelling in it, it's all over the place. And so, yeah. I mean, for people to praise that movie and dog on BVS, it's like, no, we're looking at two really good cheeseburgers instead of one awesome cheeseburger. Or, you know, I don't know where I got cheeseburgers, but like,
I like it though. I'm hungry now.
Me too. Starve.
Dude, I am so hungry. Anyway, like, I do think that Justice League, there's going to be that group of reversionists. What's the right word I'm looking for? Reservists.
Yeah, reservists.
Man, that was hard to say. My mouth was not wanting to move.
Okay.
But you're going to have that group of people who are going to wait, maybe even past the first weekend, because they want to hear what people online are saying. Then they're going to see, oh, my friend went to go see it. I'm going to wait to see what he says. Because of how they felt, maybe if they got burned by BVS, you're going to have this big group of people. Now, BVS made a buttload of money. It still underperformed for what WB wanted it to. It was supposed to be, for them, a much bigger success. They have the opportunity here to do so. And Wonder Woman, like, was probably the best thing that ever could have happened to them, because that's the movie leading up into this. And since they got a base hit off of this, or even a double, now there's not.
I go triple, because they got fan love, critic love, and box office profit. It is the most successful DCEU movie in the U.S., and then I'm pretty sure it's getting close to around the world.
Right.
So that's a triple play, if not a freaking home run.
They're in scoring position, and now this movie's up to bat, and it has every opportunity going for it. We saw the trailers leading up to Comic-Con, and I adored that Comic-Con trailer. I'm like, this trailer changes. Like, it changed the theme of the movie to me almost. You know, it was like, this is the trailer that we needed to see to get hyped up for this movie, and I'm so looking forward to it, and I cannot wait. And this fall is going to suck on my wallet, by the way. And for being someone who has a toddler, and like, we have to pick and choose the movies that we go see. We saw Guardians, you know, we had to get a babysitter. You know, we saw Spider-Man, had to get a babysitter, got rear-ended that day. Yeah, dude, it's bad. $8,000 worth of damage.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I'm so surprised they didn't total it. However,
I have breaking news when we get to it.
Okay. But so in November we have Thor Ragnarok. I want to see that movie. Justice League, want to see that movie. And then just a few weeks later in December, The Last Jedi, I want to see that movie.
Oh, that's true. It's a month afterwards. So
yeah, we are packed right there. And it's going to be difficult because, you know, I usually like to go with my wife. We watch these movies together. We both enjoy them. But then I had, like, she wasn't so sure that she wanted to see Deadpool. And then I went and saw it and said, you need to see this damn movie. And then we bought it when it came out. And she goes, oh, my God, I can't believe I didn't want to go see this. I'm like, right? And so I'm hoping I don't have to do that with any of those movies. But just depending on when we can get someone to watch the little one, I may have to go I may have to go stag. And that's so weird to sit in the theater at 11 o'clock in the morning to watch Deadpool, and there's like a room just full of random other people in there by themselves, and I'm just like, I feel like we're all here to like see a snuff film or some sort of like inappropriate theater. I felt so awkward, dude. You have no idea.
Well, actually, I do. I wanted to see my parent, my mother and sisters a long, long, long time ago. My mom and sister wanted to go see a movie, Legally Blonde 2. And I'm like, I am not watching that movie. And they go, well, we can't leave you at home. I don't know why. I was like 12. And they go, well, I got to find another movie for me. I'm like, fine. And there was this cartoon Sinbad movie. It had Brad Pitt in it and everything. And I was like it was the 10 a.m. showing. I was one of three people there. I didn't care. I was like, I'm watching this movie. And I liked the movie. And thank goodness, because Legally Blonde would have probably made me brain dead. But, you know, I feel your pain. But, you know, there is nothing wrong with watching a movie yourself as long as you enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, no. And then seeing Deadpool, the seven people in that movie theater, we were all laughing hysterically at this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And which, when you go see a movie and you have a theater full of people and you're all laughing and enjoying it, it kind of helps the... helps it out a little bit, and it helps you laugh even, it lets you like let loose and laugh a little easier. But that movie didn't need any help to getting us to laugh at all. Now, Nate.
And so,
go ahead, Todd.
Sorry, one last thing. And that's the thing about, like, Deadpool is another example of this. Long production time, lots of reshoots, you know, money issues. Ryan Reynolds had to pay the writers to stay because the company wouldn't do it. You know, this was supposed to make $80 million. It made $140 million. The highest rated R-rated film ever, you know, that says something. And, you know, you can't judge a movie by what happens behind the scenes. Now, yes, some you can. Mm-hmm. Fantastic Four, do you want?
Which one?
You know, yeah. Oh, hey, okay. First of all, the first one was actually kind of good. The second one, the Galactus, they screwed that over. We don't even talk about the reboot, but the reboot's what I'm talking about, because Josh Trank, like, did something, and like it was horrible.
Nate has a infamous rant on that movie.
Well, we'll listen to it later. We're already over an hour, but I want to hear the breaking news.
I have an infamous rant on what, Brando?
On the Fantastic Four, that time that I went away when Wyatt was born, and you had a whole episode on it was like almost an entire episode of you just ranting.
Yeah,
I could do that.
I was
about
not
Iron
very
Fist.
Happy. It was. I haven't seen it yet. And I can't wait to see the Defenders. But here's some late breaking news for you dudes. Ben Affleck calls Justice League an interesting product of two directors. The DCEU has witnessed its share of changes, especially Justice League with its director swap. So how has that process worked out for Batman? Director Zack Snyder stepped off the film after a family tragedy, with Batgirl director Joss Whedon stepping in to finish the product. Batman actor Ben Affleck recently spoke to EW about how it's been working on the product of two directors and two visions, and he said it's a little bit unorthodox. Zack had a family tragedy and stepped off, which was horrible. For the movie, the best person we could have possibly found was Joss. We got really lucky that he stepped in.
Bam.
He also describes it as an interesting product of two directors with both with kind of unique visions, both with really strong takes. He's never had that experience before in making a movie. I have to say, I really love working with Zack, and I really love the stuff we've done with Joss. So he said, I never worked on a movie that didn't do reshoots. Argo did reshoots. 4 days on Gone Baby Gone for reshoots. He said that this time it seems like they're getting it right, and it's starting to feel like it's really working. So this place that Affleck comes from saying it's an interesting product sounds like a positive take of interesting product and not, oh God, this might be a train wreck.
Well, okay, for the record, I kind of go back to the San Diego Comic-Con, where the day before the WB panel, the internet blew up. Oh my gosh, Ben Affleck's going to be off of Batman. They're going to gracefully transition and you know, and all that. And then what's the first thing Ben Affleck says? Dude, I got the best freaking job on this planet. What do you want? What do you want from me? You know, so but I am Batman and all that. And you know, now for this one, you could argue that he's playing PR, because, you know, what's he supposed to say? You know, oh, we should have stuck with Zack. You know, he shouldn't have let this in the trash. What is he supposed to say? But I do think that given the point it is in his career, he doesn't have to be the PR guy. So I would like to think that he's being honest here. And you have to agree, if they lost Zack Snyder, you know, who's the best person they could get? I could argue for Matt Reeves, but obviously that wasn't going to happen because of, you know, the Planet of the Apes was just finishing, but Joss, who had no projects at the time, who did Avengers, who has helped create some amazing world, yeah, he's literally the best replacement for Zack Snyder. And based on interviews I've been seeing, like they interviewed Cyborg's dad, the actor, I can't remember his name, they basically said that the reshoots were about slightly changing the tone of certain characters and scenes, which is fine because Joss is very much about characters. And this is literally, in theory, the worst thing that could have happened. You know, Zack is gone. You know, despite all the hate, the haters he has, you know, Zack's gone and they have to finish the movie with someone else. But with Joss, Joss will respect what Zack did. And there's no way they're reshooting the whole film. That would have cost, you know, double the budget. So whatever these reshoots are, they're ending. They have to end soon. And even at Comic-Con, they said, oh yeah, the reshoots are nothing. You know, Jason Momoa was like, the reshoots are like done or whatever. And, you know, Momoa is working on Aquaman now. And whatever he's adding, it can only make the movie better, which I know it sounds like a slight on Zack Snyder, but it's like, no, if he feels this is make it better, I will trust Joss Whedon's judgment. Now, yes, Ultron was not the best thing, but he had Marvel pointing a gun to his head for some of the scenes. Like, there's a reason it did not end well with him. But I'm thinking that DC is giving him a little more of a wide berth because he is who he is, and he's going to be directing Batgirl, which I'm very excited for. So, you know, Joss isn't going to screw this up, because if he does, Batgirl may be off the table. So, I trust Joss. I trust Joss.
Yeah, and then it's so interesting that you mentioned that way back, like, you know, around the Comic-Con, they were talking about Affleck was out, and then he ended up signing on for the whole Bat trilogy plus a possible Batman Beyond film.
Love that.
I know. I love Batman Beyond. It's one of my favorite Batman anythings.
To be clear, if by some miracle they had somehow worked it out to where Michael Keaton could have been that old Bruce Wayne, I would have been fine with it.
Yeah.
But if they keep Ben Affleck to keep continuity going, I'm fine with that too, as long as we get Batman Beyond.
We'll see. And by that point, we don't even have the first Batman film yet. By the time we get to that fourth film, you know, Ben will be older. He'll be close to almost 60. And so, you know, he'll have no problem playing an old man. He will have failed every single one of these superhero movies. And so he can hobble around and he won't have to do a whole lot in that movie. But no, you know what? That is such a, the whole, you know, dynamic of the two directors, the whole dichotomy thing. You know, I told our audience and Nate when that news first broke that I did not feel Joss coming on here was going to fundamentally change the movie. I think
that would be wrong and impossible.
You know, the cupcake is already made. You know, it's already even got icing on it. Now he's adding sprinkles.
Ah, sprinkles.
It has.
See, now I've got cheeseburger and sprinkles on my mind. I'm going to be starving by the time this podcast is over.
Oh, man. You know what? We need to circle back around here. And we need to talk about your Kickstarter some more, because I wanted to talk about some of your pledges, like your pledge tiers and what they get.
Yes. Okay.
Because as you said earlier, you can pledge just, you know, you can pledge whatever you're comfortable with, and so your first pledge level is, you know, is a buck. It's a very, very minute, but every single dollar helps to get this goal. And then your next tier up is $5. And of course, it's a digital copy of the comic. I mean, I am a physical game collector. I have, you know, I collect, you know, physical copies of games. I have a room full of them, 824. But it's funny, but I have all these games I have to get physical copy of, but when it comes to comics, I am primarily a digital reader now.
Well, and I have two rewards for you. And like you said, $5, it gets you the full 72-page comic, graphic novel, digitally, which has been very popular. You know, some people can just want to get a digital comic, and I'm fine with that. But for you, I feel that the $15 pledge would be better, because if you pledge to that amount, not only will you get all of 10,000 miles, you will get my Guardians and Home series included. So that, you're getting 26 comics for $15.
That is an insane deal for $15. And
it's a gift.
And Guardians, you have finished Guardians, right?
It's currently on hiatus, but we are bringing it back. But it did end like an arc of sorts.
An arc, okay. But so you have a complete story there for Guardians. You have, you know, Home Complete, which you could get in this package as well as your new story. And for 15, that is an excellent deal. And so then something that you mentioned earlier, the 25 pledge gets you a physical copy of 10,000 Miles. And so then you also get the PDF digital version,
for free as well.
I mean, and that's really cool. I mean, at this point, like, all DVDs come with a digital copy now anyway.
That's weird, but and then we move up to. I get it, but I don't really use it. But I mean, it's nice to know.
It's there. Well, honestly, something that we've been talking about is that we want to get, like, anytime we buy a movie now, it's like, well, let's get this just for the kid. You know, and maybe because we're thinking about maybe getting him like a kid tablet or something, maybe like in a year or two, and maybe we could put those on there.
Oh.
But then you have the $30 pledge, 30 or more,
we have a couple of those actually. A friend of mine whose name is Candace Camilleri. I met her at a con. She's really nice. She is doing some special prints of Bryce and Chris, and we're giving those away as one of the rewards. So we already have one person getting one, and then if you want to get the other, you got to pledge to that soon. Then we have another where you're going to get your name in a thank you section on the book, which is our inside front cover. And so we're really excited about that. I think that one's not going to get as popular because last time it was $15 when I was doing it for Home, but because of the increased cost of the comic, you know, I had to put it at 30 and not like 15. But, you know, we'll see how many goes, and then I might just grab the rest of the names and just throw it on there for the heck of it, but we'll see. Then you can also get, you know, a physical copy of 10,000 Miles and my digital comics for like 35, I think I put it as. I don't remember. But then the big one that I'm proud of is you can get drawn into the comic for $50. And that one's been really popular. I know a lot of people love to get drawn into comics. So it was 75 during Home, and I'm like, I can do better than this. It's 72 pages. I can get more people into this. So I'm like, let's drop it down to 50, offer more positions. And so we think we have like 25, 24 left for people. So if you want to get into the comic, you know, go push that $50 reward. It's I highly recommend, and you will be drawn prominently so that you will be able to see yourself in the panel. And my previous Home people can attest to how well we draw them in. Jumping up to 75, we have another personal favorite. If you are trying to get into comics yourself, if you want to write novels or whatever, sometimes you want that helping hand, that guiding voice. I will be that voice for you. We will have a Skype chat. I will help you. If you want to do a script review, I will read your script and give you my thoughts. I will help you on your journey into comics. Oh, yeah. Just did that.
Man,
thank you. And then,
bam, home run.
Yeah, that's how I roll. Then finally, our $150 rewards, you can get 10,000 Miles, all of Guardians, and all of Home in physical copy.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm proud of my rewards. I try and do awards that will, appeal to everyone in digital comics, physical comics, getting drawn into comics, helping out writers, helping artists. Oh, that was one I forgot. We also have a $50 reward where if you are an artist and you're wanting to get your work published, you can pledge that tier, and you can draw one of my characters from 10,000 Miles, and we will put your art in the back of the book with your name and a link to your website so you can show off your work.
That's cool.
And I've got a friend who said he's probably going to do that. So we have room for 8 artists on this. So we'll go from a 72-page graphic novel to an 80-pager, but I will do that for you, artists out there. And this will help you get exposure. You know, everyone will see these pages and go, oh, that looks cool. Let me go check out the rest of your art. I want to help everyone I can because you're helping me. So if you're an artist out there, check out the Kickstarter. Go push that tier. We will put your art in the back of the book.
Man, I love it. I think this is incredible. I can't wait to get my hands on 10,000 Miles. Brandon, did you have anything you wanted to add to Todd? Ask him. I know we're rolling on to getting kind of on here.
Yeah.
Dude, our last podcast together was like 2 hours. So we're at an hour 15. This is nothing.
Yeah. Right. We were really? What was that
last?
It was
long. That Civil War BVS thing took a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
But it was awesome. No, Todd, obviously we love having you on here. You mentioned, you know, just to touch back on this a little bit, you know, we are really soon here going to be bringing Journey into Wrestling back. I guess we can announce that here, Brando. But it's time. Journey into Wrestling's been on the shelf for a little bit, and maybe we could have Todd as a guest for our SummerSlam review.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally watching SummerSlam. I watch Lucha Underground. I watch NXT. So I would be able to lend my expertise, you know, and all that. So I'd be happy to help you out with that.
All right, man. We'll definitely get back with you when we're going to record that. We have a set date that we have in mind that we're going to be recording that first one back. And so we'll let you know, and hopefully you're available then. And if not, yeah, maybe we can work it around and we can do that. Again, we want to thank you for coming on, Todd. We always love having you on. We really, really wish all the luck on your newest project. Journey into Comics has a very good success rate with some of the artists that we've had on here, of course, with the Black Suit of Death and Speak No Evil. All those projects have gotten funded. I want to say that I think Black Suit of Death had they had one that didn't go, but then he came back, you know, more fierce than ever, and we got that through. And of course, you know, you being on here, we will help plug this thing as much as we can until the very end. We're going to help try and direct people to this episode. That way they can hear your voice. They can hear exactly what you want this thing to be. You are you have such a way with words. I mean, you've almost sold me this book just by talking.
Well, I am a writer.
Yes, of course. And of course, I want to throw again a nod over to Amazon, where you can check out Home, the graphic novel, the collection of all five issues there, available for $14.99 on. You'll get paperback on that, and
it's nice. I mean, I have a copy actually right here next to me. It's nice.
You'll be able to get that shipped right to your door. Oh, look at that!
Hey,
looking just like a QVC model.
Yeah.
But,
that's
I wish it was a video cast, because they were like, what was that pause about? And they're like, oh, well, Todd held up the comic, obviously. So,
no, it looks awesome.
Thank you.
You know, it's the first time we've ever done video, and this is probably like the best audio quality that we've had in a long time.
You jinxed it now, Brando.
Yeah. The sound is going. Go out.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Thank you.
Anyway, best of luck to you on this, man. I really hope that that this project sees it all the way through and gets funded. I hope it gets funded early, and I hope that even more people jump on this. I hope we can help drive traffic to it.
And I hope you two will consider pledging, whether it be to physical comics or digital comics. And
absolutely,
if you can, pledge tonight. I'm just saying.
Absolutely, Nate.
Oh, one last thing. I'm sorry. This
sure,
has to be
go
said.
Ahead.
For those who don't know about Kickstarter, if you pledge to a reward, you do not get charged unless we get funded. Mm-hmm. So if you're saying, well, I'm not going to have money till next week, you can still pledge today, and you're not going to be charged a thing. It's if we get funded on, you know, September 11th, then you will be charged the amount you pledge, but only then. So don't worry about – and you can lower or cancel your pledge at any time. So don't fear being bound to this Kickstarter if something should go wrong, like an $8,000 car crash that wasn't totaled somehow.
I tell you what, man, it was jarring for sure.
I had an accident like that. I know I do feel your pain. So.
But that's
my last bill.
Yeah, thankfully no one was hurt, and the only thing that was hurt was my poor Mandy. She was hurt pretty bad.
I love that you named your car Mandy. That's just so.
There's a story.
That's not weird.
There's a story behind
it. That's not weird at all.
I got my car is a blue Subaru Crosstrek, right? And my first car was a blue Impreza, and we called it the Normandy. Shorthanded it to Mandy. So the Crosstrek is literally just a bigger, better Impreza, a little bit more sporty. So I called it the Normandy SR2. So it's still Mandy technically.
Okay.
And
I love that.
And then we put We have a little what's it, the license plate cover thing that says my other car is a TARDIS. So her car, her car is the TARDIS, but she has some sort of name for it. I can't remember what she called it.
Yeah. Do you suppose if the car was so bad it always got to places late, she could call it Tardy?
That was good.
Oh wait, I got another one. Wait a minute. If you're driving the Normandy, doesn't that make you Joker?
I tell you what, sometimes I feel like it. Sometimes I get home from work and I hobble in. So I feel like my bones are about so brittle that they're just going to shatter apart after work. Man, yeah, I'm all walking with a hunch and everything and, you know, saying what the shit and all that kind of things that Joker says.
So Brando, before we get out of here, as we started the episode a little bit, we have the network.
Yes.
And with that network comes a lot of new stuff going on.
New stuff. A lot of things.
We launched my new podcast today.
The Voice of Survival podcast starring Nate Phillips.
Yeah. Episode one went up. I'm really, really happy with how it turned out. I think it's a really great encapsulating an interview with someone whose story really needed to be out there in the capacity that I gave her to put it out there, you know?
Oh, dude, she really opened up. Of course, we're talking about Sarah, the founder of The Walk Among Us, the only piano, punk rock piano tribute to the Misfits. Of course, she tells her entire musical journey within that. With enough stuff to leave, you know, if she ever wants to come back. And I really felt like she was a natural. Once she opened up, once she got comfortable, you know, that episode really flowed very well, and it was just an awesome listen.
Well, I appreciate that sentiment. It was weird because we were talking and I looked and I was like, oh, we're only at 1 hour. We can keep going a little bit longer. And I looked again and we were at like 1 hour and 45 and I was like, oh, not bad. And the next thing I knew, it was almost 3 hours. And I was like, holy shit, we really went for it that time, you know, but, I'm really happy with that, how that turned out. Now, we have a couple other shows we can officially announce on the podcast right here. As we know, Blaine's new podcast, Podcastrophy, is coming out soon. You're recording that with him, first episode?
Yeah, I do believe we're going to meet up sometime next week to do the first episode with him and his friend Scotty. So that should be debuting here on the network soon. And reminder that if you go to our Patreon over there, A Journey to Comics, our Patreon, if you pledge even one, like a buck, we have two tiers, $1, $3. And $1 gets you the early access. So some of these episodes, they're going to be like done and in the can a few days, up to a week in advance. And if you pledge even $1, you get that show as soon as it's edited. I will put it up onto Patreon for you guys to listen to. And of course, if you decide to go the one up to the $3, you do get the bonus cast that we put up for exclusive for patrons every single month. And then I do believe we're going to try and do some Q&A podcasts a couple times a year. So,
yeah, Brando. And what you need to not forget is an important addition to our Patreon that starts
next week.
Now?
No, next week.
Next week.
All right. So, okay. If you look at the network, and you'll see shows like the Journey to Comics podcast, Journey into Wrestling, Foodies Watching Movies, the Voice of Survival podcast, the upcoming Podcastrophy, and of course the soon coming the Poor Rapport, starring Poor Boy from Foodies Watching Movies. Well, there's a show that started on Journey to Comics feed that left to its own feed. It's called the Game Addicts podcast that I started with myself and my good friend Mike. Well, if you go over there, you can subscribe there. You can go watch us on YouTube. We film, we show our games off. You know, I got games. I got a whole bunch of, you know, I got Danganronpa, for Christ's sake. You know, I am a gamer. So what does that mean? Like, why are we talking about this? It's like, well, originally we were just going to plug. Okay, we'll plug to Patreon. We'll plug to network. How about this, guys? What we're going to do, we sometimes film Game Addicts as far as a week in advance just because of when we record. Because we're not on the main feed for iTunes or Stitcher or all that kind of stuff, the Patreon's a different feed. It is an early feed for all you guys that want to back us. And if you guys back us, you will get Game Addicts when it's edited a week in advance. There you go. So if you like that show, if you subscribe over there to the Game Addicts, you like hearing me talk about games, like hearing Mike talk about games and not remembering what system is, you know, games are on sometimes, and we joke about it. And sometimes our, you know, my good friend Nate is on there. Sometimes Silent Rob sneaks up the stairs and surprises us. you know, we always have a fun time on that podcast. That show will now be available early to all of our patrons, along with all the other great shows on the network as well.
Yeah, when you brought this to my attention, like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a super smart idea. You guys kind of went to start your own journey, your own venture, and I really, like, Game Addicts has blossomed into a podcast that I listen to as a listener genuinely every week. I don't miss an episode. I was listening to Genesis Doesn't on the way down today. You know, you almost want to make me pledge $1 to my own Patreon just so I can get early access to the Game Addicts. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking about it, you know. But really, the idea of this network is to continuously grow. I feel like this past week, you and I have communicated a lot. We've communicated with a lot of the network. We have our own little chat bubble that we work within. And everything's shaping up real nice, Brando. We have the JourneyIntoComics.com now. You don't have to go to JourneyIntoComics.podbean.com. Get rid of the .podbean. We love you, Podbean. Thank you so much for being where we're hosted. But we like being able to just say, hey, go to JourneyIntoComics.com, and you can get us and all of our awesome podcasts. It's got a good ring to
it, you know?
It really does, Brando. We have kind of got early access to some of these shows. Poor Boy has given us the first episode of the Poor Report. He officially dropped his Facebook today and made it live, and this is really happening. I can't wait for that to come out. By this point, it might have already come out. I don't know how we're going to really release that. We've kind of discussed a couple different things there. But I guess for our early access subscribers, they can get it as soon as, like, this episode too, probably.
Well, it'll probably be uploaded tonight, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So that's all I have for the network, Brando. We want to once again, Todd, thank you so much for coming on, talking about 10,000 Miles. Love the Pokemon shirt, can see. Are you playing Pokemon Go?
No.
No? Oh, he says no. Very staunch, just no.
Well, when I got I'll keep this short. When the game came out, I had a very bad phone, and so it kept dying on me because I kept playing Pokemon Go. And then by the time I got a new phone, I just had no interest. Now, I still watch Pokemon's anime every Saturday morning on Disney XD, and I'm looking forward to Pokemon Ultra Sun and Moon on the Nintendo 3DS, and the Pokemon Core game that's coming next year, potentially to the Nintendo Switch. But no, not Pokemon Go.
Well, I think that's a very valid reason. I think if you didn't get in on this game from the jump and have the ability to play it every single day, you can definitely feel a discord and, like, you're way behind, whatever that means. Yeah. And I can tell you, I know people who it's hard. They set the game down because it was frustrating. The tracker was shitty, whatever, you know, whatever reason they had. And then now they don't want to pick it up. And I think right now is, like, the best time to be playing Pokemon Go. They've made such improvements and advancements that it's genuinely a good experience, and it's fun. And I mean, I had a cool raid experience where me and, like, 30 people I've never met before beat an Articuno. Of course, I did not catch the Articuno because fuck me, I guess. I don't know why. It just didn't work. I did everything right. It just, I wasn't supposed to catch him. And now I'm boycotting all the legendary birds because I missed Articuno. So.
Dang straight.
That's all I have for that. Again, Todd, as we've said, thank you so much. Back his new Kickstarter. Go to tinyurl.com/10,000milescomic. You will get the comic. You can also check him out on Amazon, folks. Get Todd Black at Facebook. You Facebook search for Todd Black if you know, really want to try to friend this guy.
Or at Twitter, @Guardians_comic.
Thank you. I couldn't remember the Twitter because I knew it was tied to the first comic. But thank you so much. Brando, did you have any last things to add, my friend?
That is, I think, going to wrap up this week's episode of the Journey to Comics podcast.
Episode 152. I didn't say that in the beginning. I should make sure to make mention we're at 152 episodes right now. That's crazy. But if that's going to do it for this week of Journey into Comics, I'm Nate.
I'm Brando.
I'm Todd.
And this was awesome. Keep filling your brain with shit. Later.